Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back to Diet Ride Podcast with Alyssa Miller
and Brooke Miller.
And we're both dietitians,
both from the Midwest,
both live in Denver,
both moms.
I'm out. All right, that's the end of that. And today we have an awesome guest here to bring into you guys. So we're going to kind of let her introduce herself.
Yeah. So this is my friend Liz, everybody. So be nice to her. She's be awesome.
Nice. We know you guys are usually so mean.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Liz is another dietitian. We went to college together. And so that is how we met. And so I will let her introduce herself. She can talk a little bit about her new podcast and about what she does and what she specializes in and how she got to become a dietitian. So Liz, take it away.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. So again, yeah, my name is Liz Reeson. I am a Wisconsin native along with Brooke, and I still live in Wisconsin.
Lame.
So yeah, I live just outside Milwaukee. I have a new podcast, Venture to Live Well, which kind of goes off of my dietitian practice I have, which is Venture Nutrition. I work mostly with women, and I do virtual consults. So I kind of, I guess, talk through my journey, but yeah. I've kind of changed my focus slowly as one thing led to another. So I think now kind of where I've landed has been women with hormone imbalance, digestive issues, kind of those chronic inflammatory underlying what's going on. So kind of putting the puzzle pieces together and working mostly with nutrition, food, supplements, and natural things.
Awesome. So I know you started with like LEAP, right? You were doing like the LEAP testing.
Yeah. Yeah. So the mediator release test, so a food sensitivity test that I really liked because I'll kind of explain it in my most simple manner.
Yeah.
But what it's doing is it's testing your immune cells with a blood sample. And then they are looking at just kind of a basic ratio of solid to liquid. So your solids are going to be your blood cells, and they have that. And then they introduce a protein from a food or a food chemical, and they watch and measure the solid to liquid. So the liquid's the plasma, and as the solids kind of change, those are going to be chemical mediators. And that's kind of what your immune cells release when there's something foreign. So they always release when you're eating something and they come in contact with food, because it's just saying, hey, this is a carrot protein or this is a banana protein. And so they release some mediators. But once it gets to a level where there's a lot of mediators being released, so it's a simple bar graph is the test result you get back. Then we know, okay, that's a reaction that shouldn't be happening. So your cells are mistaking that food or that food chemical as harmful. And so we need to remove that for time being. And so we kind of work through a very specific elimination diet based off those test results to kind of get you back into a low inflammatory response.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because I feel like when I was in college, when we learned about like food sensitivity tests or food allergy tests, they were kind of like, hey, they're super unreliable. Because I remember learning about them where they would like pull apart your skin and like push a little piece of like the food that you may be sensitive to with a needle underneath your skin. And then it was like, if it puffed up, you would have this allergy. And it was just like this thing of like, hey, maybe you'll benefit from taking it out of your diet, maybe not. And it was kind of like all trial and error. So now they're actually taking blood from you. You take one sample of blood and test it across a ton of different allergens, right?
Correct. Yeah. So the food allergy test, that still is around. And they're
the skin prick, right?
Yes.
The skin prick is allergy reactions, not sensitivities, right?
Correct. Yeah. And so
gotcha.
The skin prick test is really the best for environmental. So looking at, you know, trees and pollen and pets and things like that. But for food, it's going to be best to have your blood sample.
Gotcha.
Although, so yeah, there's so many tests out there. There's ones that are like, hey, send us your hair and we can tell you. But that just, there's no way in my mind how that could work. Yeah.
The science of that does not make sense in my head.
Okay. Yeah. Give me $1,000 and I will send you your results.
Yeah. Send me some hair in the mail. Yeah. How creepy would that be?
You just got a
lump of hair.
I had a friend who worked at a chiropractor's office who had a food sensitivity test where all you do is you put your palm onto this machine and it'll do a palm reading and tell you what your food sensitivity is.
No.
Also,
I call bullshit on that.
I think my mom went to a chiropractor once and they like hovered something over her and yes. She's like, you're allergic to milk. And I was like, mom, I don't think you're allergic to milk. You've been having
yes.
a glass of milk a day for years. And, you know, you don't have rashes. You don't have bloody diarrhea. Totally. Like, I'm pretty sure you don't have a milk
it's
allergy.
It's insane. And not just chiropractors, but I've heard of it in chiropractor's office too, where you're like, what are you voodoo medicining people?
Yeah.
So that's cool. So you use the LEAP test, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So what makes the LEAP test like special from all the other ones out there?
Yeah, good question. So there's, I'd say probably one of the biggest ones out there is going to be the ALCAT test or the ELISA okay. test. And what they're looking at is just your IgG cell. So like the food allergies, IgE, they're looking at just the IgG. And that's kind of where we're like, it could help you. It could benefit you or it could do nothing if you remove that food. Because specifically the IgG, that's your first cell that kind of sends off the alarm. So like I said, every single food is going to send an alarm because it's a foreign protein in your body. So with the IgG test, it's not very accurate. Where the doctor who actually created that test, Dr. Prasula, he was learning more and more about immune cells and actually wanted to change the test. And so he moved on to the mediator release test, which is through Oxford Biomedical Laboratories.
Right.
And so that's kind of where it's, you know, it's not a specific immune cell we're looking at. We're just looking at the straight immune reaction. Like, how are your cells overall responding and how many of those chemical mediators are being released?
Okay. And then once you get those results, you share them with your clients and you work on them with like an elimination diet. Do you take everything that came back, you know, super highly sensitive out of their diet and start from like scratch? Or where do you start with one food at a time?
We start. So since we're testing 170 foods out of there's 80,000 foods and chemicals right. in our grocery store. So the goal is to look at the food test results and actually use the foods that were lowest reactive, because those are foods we tested and we know are low. So those are going to be the safest for you to have. So we try to get that's kind of why a dietitian does this test, is that you take the results, but then you have to make sure that they're eating a balanced diet. So you kind of work with the results that way. But yes, anything that's high reactive, you're going to remove. But the one thing with food sensitivities is that they're constantly changing. If you have this test done now in October, I usually tell people, if you're not ready to do this right away, we need to do it within the next couple months, like with 3 months, because those cell, that reading is going to change. And so the good news of that is that by removing foods, so higher reactive foods for like 3 months or 6 months, those immune cells kind of forget that memory. And then you're allowed, once everything's low inflammatory and your body and immune system's back to working, we can start to introduce those foods back in. So it's not a forever thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is interesting. I know, like when I got diagnosed with celiac, initially they did the IgG and IgA test. And then after I had been gluten-free for 6 months, my blood like levels were super normal and they weren't at all before. Right. I didn't have any inflammatory response afterwards, but it's just cool that you can test so many different foods because, yeah, like the test I did was just for celiac and gluten.
And super great news that you can then reintroduce it when you're at a low inflammatory state. Because that would be overwhelming. I mean, it's super overwhelming. My mom's going through kind of an elimination diet right now, and it's so hard. Like, luckily, her daughter's a dietitian, so we can work together to get adequate nutrients for her and even just adequate calories. I mean, a lot of her high-calorie foods have been removed. And so it's like, how do I eat enough to have energy? And she's dealing with thyroid issues where it's like, and my thyroid's causing me to have low energy. This is too much. So it's really a lot. So it's good to work directly with a dietitian. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, and like Brooke, you said with celiac and autoimmune, I think that's been the most fun thing that I've had with this test is that mm-hmm. usually people think, oh, food sensitivities, I have to have like GI issues. So I do get a lot of patients who seek me out because of GI issues.
Sure.
But I've also seen the effects of this with people with multiple sclerosis and people with arthritis and chronic migraines and just all these things that really aren't, they don't have any GI issues, but they see improvement. So it's cool working mm-hmm. with the immune cells like that.
That's really cool. So what do you see like most common? Like what's like a habitual thing that you see frequently in your practice of people being allergic to or have sensitivities to? And how does that manifest for them typically?
I guess probably definitely milk is a big one.
Right. Yeah.
But aside from that, I would say, oh man, I probably food chemicals. So we do test for food chemicals and that's one of the trickiest things because a lot of them that we test are actually naturally present in foods. So it's not, you know, avoid processed foods with bad ingredients because that goes across the board, but it's tyramine, which is just the aging chemical. So you can have a green banana, but you can't have a banana that has any brown on it because now the tyramine's escalated. Or leftovers. So a lot of people with the elimination diets, you do batch cooking because it makes it a lot easier. So you can cook something and eat it for the week. Well, now if you have a tyramine sensitivity, we got to start freezing that stuff within 48 hours or the tyramine is going to get too high. So
jeez, that's exhausting.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. But I always tell people, I'm like, I've worked with this test for, I think it's been 5 years. Over 5 years. So I'm like, I can work with whatever this test comes back as. Like we can figure it out. So.
And then how long would you see like a typical client? Like how long until they can start reintroducing foods and then do you do the test again?
So usually I only have them go 2 weeks on the initial phase diet where we kind of stick to the lowest. And then after those 2 weeks, they can start introducing one by one. And then depending on the symptoms we're dealing with. So if we're dealing with psoriasis or migraines or arthritis, something that takes longer to develop, I might have them wait like 3 to 4 days before they introduce the next food just to make sure there's no reaction.
Sure,
if it's something a little more immediate, like GI issues, they usually can introduce within every 48 hours. So.
Okay. And how long are they? Sorry, did you say how long they're working off that food?
Usually 3 months or six months, depending. Usually the 6 month one is only like one food or two foods. It's nothing.
Gotcha.
Major.
Sure. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. And I feel like you're such a good cook too, and you have so many good recipes. So are you helping clients as well? Like if they have to eliminate dairy and they're used to eating dairy or something that's a common ingredient, do you also provide them recipes and ideas?
Oh yeah. I'd say that's definitely the majority of it is, you know, going over the results with them, understand it, working with them to figure out the diet too, because even that initial phase diet, although I want it to be the lowest inflammatory and working off those test results, it also needs to be something they're going to eat, because if they're not going to eat it, it's not going to work. So I work with them to develop that diet so they feel comfortable with it. And then after that kind of comes, I would say, all the work where I'm putting together recipes, I'm finding products that they can use in place of their coffee creamer or their noodles or the crackers or things like that. So yeah, that definitely is a big part of it. And I think the support, like when they reach out, because they get tired after probably a week of the same foods.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I like that you're not like putting them on a specific like diet per se meal plan where you're like Monday you're eating this, Tuesday you're eating this. You're just saying these are the foods temporarily we're going to take away from you. We're going to see how you do. And here's like tons of recipes that you can choose from. So when you're in the mood for something, this is what you can decide to eat. Because I think like as dietitians, we're always, people just expect us to just give them a meal plan. Monday, you're eating this for every meal. Tuesday, you're eating this. And it's like, it's so hard to follow because you don't know what you're going to be craving on Monday or Tuesday. So it's just nice that you're able to work with them and say, what foods do you like? Here are some different recipes that you would eat and you would like. And here's, you know, a way to make grocery shopping easier. And so I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is, I want them to learn. I want them to be able to do this on their own and understand it and be able to make changes when they want to. So yeah, when people come to me and they're like, what, give me a meal plan, just tell me what to eat. And I'm like, but then you're going to rely on me forever. Like, once you're sick of that meal plan, you're like, which is, I mean, great for my business, but I really do want to help you. I want to help you learn and feel comfortable and, you know, enjoy food. So
yeah. And I think that's so important because yeah, I think as a dietitian, everybody just expects, oh, just tell us what to eat. We don't really want to know why. We just want to be told what's good and what's bad. And you're actually teaching people how this affects them specifically. And one reason that Alyssa and I don't like diets like keto and a lot of the other fad diets is because everybody's body is so different. So like you could react to dairy poorly, but I may not. And so that's why we really hate just like generic fad diets, because you're not looking at the person as a whole. You're not taking their blood sample. You're not looking at their medical history, their medications. Like you're getting a whole picture of that patient. So I think that that's really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And always when they start, they come to me and they're, you know, really motivated, but you do the good food recall and you're like, what do you crave? And when do these cravings come? And it's like, you know, the things that they're going to run into when they just start this on their own. So mm-hmm. I think that's where a dietitian is really helpful, because we make sure. them think through that, because they just kind of get caught up in that motivated, I can do this, which is great. You need that. But you also need them to see the realistic of what are your behaviors and your habits and routines and how can we work with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And work with them, not against them, mm-hmm. like not restricting them, not making them feel super restricted, but here, what foods do you like? Here's how we can implement them into your everyday life. So yeah. I think that that's so important and it'll help people stick with it to feel better. And knowing like that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, 3 months or 6 months, if it's really going to heal your gut or your migraines or your arthritis or psoriasis, you know, I would think that that'd be worth it to trial.
Yeah, that's part of like intuitive eating, right? Seeing those results of the foods that you are eating and feeling better on them, maybe having more energy or like less headaches that you're talking about, or better skin. I mean, those are all things that we all want and try so hardly or dump a ton of money into like products where it's like, hey, it might be your diet and you might actually feel better overall. And then eventually once you're in that low inflammatory state, you know, reintroduce them, which is exciting. And then too, I think it's just nice that we have this tool now, like any of the food sensitivity tests, but especially LEAP, to actually have like a place to start from. Whereas before, like we all learned about the elimination diet, it's like rice and chicken or rice, you know, whatever. It's like so bland and so boring. Whereas now you probably have a list of foods. Hey, here's all the foods you can eat. Like instead of focusing on the bad, let's focus on the good ones and what you like and how can we mix it up differently to keep you interested and keep you consistent so that this is a sustainable diet to stay on for 3 to 6 months or whatnot. So
yeah,
that's really cool.
It's so, I always tell people too, when they call, I'm like, I'm not going to push a test on you. We don't have to do the test, but it gives us the most specific, direct. We're going to get to the root problem the fastest, because I can do an elimination diet with you with the most common things. But when I did this test on myself, when I first sought it out 5 years ago, it was because I had chronic GI issues. I had migraines all the time. And, when my test came back, I was highest, like, still, I've only seen one other client that had the higher red bar that I had. Mine was to garlic. And I was like,
I remember that you were so mad.
Yeah.
Wow. And peanut butter. And I'm like, I was eating garlic a bunch because it's anti-inflammatory. Sure. It's great for you. Like,
so oh my you goodness. Just never I wouldn't know. Wow, that's interesting. So now have you reintroduced garlic or are you still like, no way?
Yes. Yeah. So I definitely waited the 6 months and then mm-hmm. I very slowly, like if a recipe called for a clove of garlic, I was putting like a quarter teaspoon of garlic powder, like using very small amounts. And then now I eat it freely. Definitely.
Sure. Wow. That's awesome. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Come back around to garlic. Right. I would be so sad, but I guess it's nice you can come back to it. So, and then how often do you do the test again for yourself or are you like waiting to see symptoms first?
So a lot of people ask, you know, okay, I'm going to do this test and then when should I retest? And I was like, right. You know, it's one of those things you totally can retest to look at it. We have some other dietitians who have done that and like shared the results. So you get to see the bars go down and all of that. But it's expensive and insurance doesn't cover it. And I'm like, if you're feeling good, there's no need to test.
Right. So,
Yeah.
How much is it? Do you know?
Yeah.
I'm all interested in it.
Yeah. It's $400.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's $400 just for the test. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you need to be working with a dietitian or someone to help you to make sure you're meeting all your needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but if okay. you're feeling awful, it right. is still cheaper than like a colonoscopy. Or if your skin is terrible, it's still probably cheaper than all the skin products that you're going to buy for the next 6 months.
Totally.
So it is expensive, but
over time it makes sense.
Yeah.
Or even just if you're in an inflammatory state for long term, what that does to your body and then the medical bills that come on the other end of that. We should do the test, Brooke, and then do a live reading of it on the podcast.
I don't want to know.
I would love
Brooke
to
Brooke will be
know.
Like crying over the results.
It's going to be like peanut butter, cheese, wine.
Oh my gosh, cheese would kill
I
you.
I would cry.
Cheese would kill me.
I couldn't live without cheese.
I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, it would be really interesting to see. Brooke and I are totally different. She's like, I don't want to see it. And I'm like, I want to see it.
Yeah, no, I don't. I feel pretty good, guys.
I'm doing great. So
I mean, I did, though. Like, I remember when I got diagnosed with celiac 10 years ago, I just remember feeling so bad. And then when they initially came back with my blood test and said, like, oh, we got to do the upper endoscopy, and it came back that it was celiac, I was immediately like, I'm going to start today because I feel so terrible. And yeah. within 2 weeks, I was feeling like 100 times better. And so
totally worth it.
It was worth it because, I mean, when you're in college and you literally have to run out of class because your body's going to explode, it's awful. Like, it was I was so miserable.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah. Laying on the couch crying because I was in so much pain. So I think if a patient is feeling that terrible, it's mm-hmm. just worth it to figure out what's going on and how to fix it, especially if it's removing one thing from your diet.
Yeah, garlic.
It sounds awful.
Right.
Yeah, and garlic, yeah, that's not convenient, but if you had migraines and it took away your migraines, that's worth it.
Right.
Yeah,
I have this weird side pain, Liz.
Let me just diagnose tell you. Her.
Brooke and I have been like trying to figure it out for 2 years. It's been at least 2 years. And it's funny because I've probably spent way more than $400 on medical tests to figure out what it is. And every time it comes back, like, we don't know. Good luck. It's not your gallbladder, we think. And like, or you're not in a flare up. So that'd be interesting to see. Cause I cut out gluten for a while and then dairy, and I did eggs and like all this stuff, and nothing changed.
Get it? Like, how often?
Great question. It's random, and I cannot find a pattern at all. It's so frustrating.
Like, how many times in a week or a month?
No, like, so sometimes it'll go away for like 3 or 4 months, and then it will come back, and I'll have it for like 3 days in a row, and then it will go away again, and maybe come back next week for 3 or 4 days, and then it will go away for months. It's so random, and we cannot figure it out.
I think that we should have our listeners write in what they think you
diagnose
have.
Me. What's that show on Netflix?
My gosh, Diagnosis. Has everyone watched that yet?
I have not watched it. It looks like it will hype up my hypochondria.
You guys need to watch it. No joke. And the first episode is all about this girl had this crazy metabolic disease. It's really rare. And it was from the way she processed carbs. So she actually needed to eat like if I remember right, she had to eat a ton of carbohydrates because her muscles would like start breaking down and she couldn't walk and like
that's terrifying.
Move. And then it turns out it was just like a really easy fix with her diet, and it completely
Whoa.
Changed her life. And she, yeah,
Dude,
it's actually really good. So you guys should all check out the show Diagnosis. One of the episodes will make you very upset though, as a dietitian, with the compliance of the patient, but the first episode is really good. So,
Yeah.
So basically if I'm right, what that show is people that don't know what they have, and then they like get on the internet and try to like figure it out, and they find other people in the world that have the same thing.
And other doctors. And this girl went to Italy, if I remember right. I binged the whole season in one day. So if I remember right, she went to Italy and the doctors in Italy like diagnosed her. And then she came back and changed her diet and now is cured.
That's insane. Anyways.
But yeah, it is side funny. Note. Side tangent. So what exactly are you specializing in now? If you want to go into that with, sounds like you're working with more women.
Yeah. So I think through the LEAP test and the different patients I saw because of the immune system and getting different autoimmune conditions, I started seeing more women with PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I just kind of fell in love with that diagnosis because I like the complicated. Uh-huh. And that is it for women. Oh my gosh. It's just crazy that, you know, it's titled polycystic ovarian syndrome. So cysts on the ovaries, but you don't even have to have cysts on your ovaries to have this diagnosis. Really? It's really just a massive hormone imbalance, everything. So okay. You've got your sex hormones, like your estrogen, your testosterone, those are all out of whack. Your thyroid is likely out of whack. And then also insulin, common too. So another hormone for your blood sugar. And so these women, it's so grossly underdiagnosed too, because people see these women and a lot of times I would say the most common is that they're obese and they've gained a lot of weight and they just kind of get, oh, you should diet and exercise and all these things will go away. Your thyroid will normalize, your blood sugar will normalize, your hormones, just lose the weight. And they can't because it's these hormone imbalances in the first place that have caused, I had a patient who gained 60 pounds in a year with no change.
Oh my goodness.
No change in her diet, no change in her lifestyle, her activity. Like, can you imagine just gaining 60 pounds over the course of a year without doing
and not
anything?
Being pregnant?
Yeah. And I think, yeah, not being pregnant. Yeah. I think that you just made a really good point. So I've heard this from a lot of other like podcasts and it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think what people look at now is your BMI is overweight or your BMI is obese. If you just lose the weight, everything else will fall into place. But we should be looking at the root cause of like what is going on in your body internally. Mm-hmm. What is going on? Are you having reactions to food? Are your hormones off? There's so many factors. And so people just automatically assume if you're overweight or obese, you just simply lose the weight and everything magically gets fixed.
And then, they're according to the BMI, which we talked about,
yeah, sucks. Is bullshit. And so, but then you look at people who are underweight and maybe trying to gain weight, trying really hard to gain weight, but something's off with them too. People mm-hmm. just assume that they're healthy when they could in fact be really unhealthy. Like yep. they could have cancer and be starving.
Or celiac and, disease, you know?
Yeah. There's mm-hmm. so many things where you could be malnourished and it's just, people like don't seem to care about the people who are underweight either and mm-hmm. about their health. And so it's frustrating that everyone just assumes like if you just lose the weight, everything will go back to normal. Like you're right. just being lazy. You're not working out enough. You're not eating. You're eating more than like 1800 calories a day or I don't know. I just hate yeah. hearing that. It's like so hard because yeah, look at your client as a perfect example of that. She didn't change anything.
Mm-hmm. There's clearly something going on there. And I know like I've had my hormones tested and I had to beg and actually went to a doctor outside of my network with my insurance and begged for like the full hormone complete profile because everyone just was like, oh, we'll just check your TSH or like whatever. And I was like, no, we need to check everything. Like, mm-hmm. let's like break it down, like check everything because we need to figure out what's going on. And finally a doctor listened to me and sure enough, something was off. So it's like, hey, we need to, I don't know, trust the client or the patient more that they know what's going on in their own body. Like when they tell you nothing's changed, believe them that nothing's changed. Like don't, I think a lot of doctors or even dietitians sometimes will be like, oh sure, nothing's changed. Or, oh sure, I know more than you. Or I, you know, the results show this. And listen to what they're actually experiencing and listen to what they're complaining of and trust them enough to know what's going on in their own body better than you do because you read a 2-page sheet or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because my doctors at one point thought I might have PCOS and then I magically got pregnant. So then they just immediately were like, oh, you don't have PCOS because you got pregnant, but you can still get pregnant and yes. have PCOS. And for me, I was also begging for like a full workup because I was only getting a period like 5 times a year. And I was eating enough,
right?
Like I was, it wasn't like I
weren't working out.
Like, I wasn't like yeah, working out excessively. Crazy. I was eating enough. And so, I actually got pregnant, like ovulating on day 45.
That's
and
insane.
Like for anybody who's trying to conceive, like you would, my doctors literally told me like, give up, stop taking ovulation tests. You're not going to get pregnant this month. After 30 days of testing, I literally gave up and I got pregnant on day 45. But it's just, it's crazy because like I could still have it, but yeah. they were like, oh, you got pregnant. So like clearly they just wrote me off. And so it's frustrating to be on the other end and be a patient and just be completely, because I feel like the only time doctors really care to test is if you are trying to conceive and you can't conceive.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's still an issue. Even if you're not trying to get pregnant.
Yeah. Even if you're not trying to get pregnant, the hormones and the imbalance is still very real and affecting your daily life. Yes. I'm sure you know, Liz, and have heard this too. Whereas doctors are really only concerned when you're trying to conceive. And it's like, hey, I want, you know, normal periods and normal life and normal weight gain or loss or steadiness or whatnot daily, not just when I'm pregnant or just when I'm, you know, trying to get conceived, which is sad that we put all the, I don't know, pressure on moms when they're trying to conceive and not when they're just themselves.
Right.
Super important just to be you. So
yeah. And I think like when I meet with someone, my initial consult is 90 minutes long. And a lot of that is just the patient talking, like, tell me everything. And I dig deeper and deeper and deeper to get this timeline of exactly how things happened. And it kind of helps them to put the pieces together too. And then they can remember other things like, oh yeah, my father passed away at this moment. And it could be something such severe stress, emotional trauma. It could even be, you know, a lot of times a virus. If they, you know, got Epstein-Barr or something, a lot of times that can trigger. So the immune system is just so crazy. And I think maybe, you know, maybe doctors don't mean to, but they just don't get that time with a patient to be able to hear all of that. So it's just a tough thing. But yeah, that's kind of where we start. And then from there, you can get the clear picture and be able to start chipping away on those underlying triggers.
So for a lot of your patients that have PCOS, what are their symptoms typically? And then what kinds of things with diet and lifestyle do you see that helps the most?
Generally
so from like what you, yeah. Cause obviously every patient's different, but just like, what are some trends that you see, some common trends?
Yeah, I'd say right now I actually have kind of split, PCOS that are lean. So women that do not have, obesity, and then the women that do. So with the women that do, which is the most common type of PCOS, the weight loss, I would say we focus a lot on the liver, because if your liver isn't able to kind of pull out the toxins and the excess hormones and things like that, we're not going to see the weight gain, you know, stop or be able to see weight loss start. So we focus a lot on that. And with foods, I mean, overall, I guess we really work on avoiding any of the estrogen mimicking toxins. So keeping things clean as far as, you know, using plastic and avoiding personal care products that have parabens in there or phthalates. Food wise, avoiding processed foods is kind of a given.
Catch all.
Yeah, eating very whole food, getting them to, I'd say with the hormones, it's not a low carb diet by any means, but it's a high fiber diet, which kind of moves into a lower carb, because those foods being so high fiber that you're not digesting or absorbing those carbs as much. So a lot of cruciferous vegetables, kind of that.
Yeah. So I know. Yeah, no. And I think what you said is so interesting. So like, I think that focusing on the liver is so important, because our liver, you know, helps with, you know, those toxins. But it's interesting that some women with PCOS, their symptoms manifest as weight gain, because like their body is not properly like flushing out the correct toxins, and some don't. And do you feel like you see some differences with like symptoms or how their bodies react, because weight gain is just a side effect of a root cause. Do you know what I mean? And so like, what's the main difference that you see with somebody of a, let's say, quote unquote, normal weight versus somebody whose symptoms manifest as weight gain? Like, what are some of those differences? Like
unintentional weight gain without doing anything like, to prompt it.
Right.
Yeah, definitely insulin. The ones, and I have quite a few who have not had their insulin tested in probably since their diagnosis 5 or 10 years ago. And so that's kind of where I'm like, okay, we need to, the lab tests are the most helpful tool to be able to see how we're doing, because mm-hmm. it's, we want you to feel good, but we also need to know what's going on underneath, because that's really what's going to ultimately help you to feel better long-term. So with the weight gain, the excess weight, that's going to be insulin I see extremely high. So getting that lower, and then we're really focusing on keeping those carbs consistent. So mm-hmm. Kind of making sure you're eating carbs about the same amount at the same time. So we kind of almost like they have diabetes, even though if they're not diagnosed with it, because it's so important to allow the body to be able to produce that hormone and be able to estimate how much it needs every day. So I work a lot probably with carbs, and more so like I would with someone with diabetes, and then the liver if they have if they're dealing with excess weight. With normal weight PCOS, I would say it's more so the androgen, so your testosterone, your DHEA, those being high, and then maybe having facial hair or other kind of issues along with, that I would say would be more so. And then with ovulation too. So a lot of these women are younger and wanting mm-hmm. to know, you know, can I get pregnant? How do I make sure my body's ready to get pregnant? So we focus a lot on those test levels. And with foods, there's quite a few foods that kind of help with progesterone and estrogen. And then I mentioned cruciferous, so the broccoli, cauliflower, kale, those are just so good with balancing estrogen, which right. can easily become dominant. And then your other hormones don't have a chance to be, you know, at a good level. So that's kind of why you probably hear so much about getting estrogen out of the body. It's just because it right. can become dominant so quickly.
So you're probably not recommending like soy milk for patients.
That's probably not. That's a good question. Yeah.
The soy discussion is really interesting because it's like the research has gone back and forth.
But if I had PCOS, right. I would avoid it. I would assume.
Is that what you recommend, to avoid soy products?
You know, I do, but I don't. Yeah. It's not because of research. I will say that. It's more so because okay. of a fear. I mean, it's this yeah. unknown because research is so split down the middle. But right. I guess with soy in general, I tell people, if we're eating soy, try to do the fermented soy.
Yep.
So your tempeh, yeah. your tofu, your edamame, the natural, because the good studies that go along with Asian culture, they're doing, that's how they're eating it. They're not eating
right.
soy cheese and soy processed burgers. Soy. And yeah. yeah.
the processed stuff that gets ripped down to nothing and then put into food. Yes. so yeah. from a whole food.
I think that that's so cool that you can like look at their lab values, because again, like going back to the weight thing, and I think I'm going back to this because people just want to lose weight and they just right. want to know how to like get, lose weight quick. But you're saying like a lot of people, their weight gain is a symptom because like their insulin is so off. And I think that we see that so much. And Alyssa and I actually did a podcast about talking about like blood sugar balance and like trying to eat protein and protein, carbs and fats together to kind of help balance blood sugar. And so just like doing these basic lifestyle changes is going to help regulate insulin, which then in turn will kind of help your body get back to its natural set weight, because all of our natural set weight is so different.
So would you say like in your practice, when you help these women with PCOS, like Brooke and I talk a lot about intuitive eating and listening to your body and really tuning in on these tiny little, even minute changes throughout the day of how foods affect your body. Would you say that most of your clients, once you work with them about their diet, like maybe they're resistant at first and then they make the changes you recommend, do they tend to feel better even without weight loss or weight gain, but really feeling better, you know, more energetic or those kind of things? Do you see that?
Yeah, I think because we right along with their probably the other half of my job is talking about stress and managing stress, because that's going right. to totally wreck everything that you're doing with diet if you have all this stress. And the emotional toll that, you know, a weight gain or hair growth that you can't control, that sure. kind of stuff has on you is huge. So for them to know that they're working towards something, they have a plan, they're starting, to feel better. It just kind of takes that stress away. And then that just fuels to keep going and going. So yeah, I think it's really fun too, because like you said, a lot of people want to focus on weight gain, so, or weight loss. And so a lot of times they'll come to me and I always ask, like, do you have any diagnoses? And it might be PCOS or thyroid or this or this or this. And they're like, but I just want to lose weight. Like, that's why I want to come to you.
Right.
I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then they come and we meet and I say, we get this plan. I get them all into like inflammation or what we're focusing on. And they start doing, they feel good. And then it's like 2 weeks later, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm down 10 pounds. And I didn't even try. I wasn't even thinking about weight loss and I'm down 10 pounds.
You're focusing on that root cause, like Brooke's talking about. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. And it's like some people don't need to lose weight. And so they may change their diet and feel better and their weight stays completely the same. And that's great too, because that means that your body's still functioning. You know, your body can still function better and your weight can still stay the same. Or if you're underweight, you may be able to start gaining weight because your hormones are finally like becoming balanced. So I feel like weight is just always a side effect, and like, we should never try to control our weight because it's never going to work. We need to like try to just give our body the best energy and focus on, yeah, our hormones and our insulin. Like, we don't want our insulin to be in the 400s. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to be able to control it naturally with food and our diet and lifestyle. So I think that that's really cool that you are able to do that with clients.
Hey, Liz, thanks so much for coming on. Do you have any like final thoughts you want to leave any of our listeners with? And then also I'd love for you to share where they can find you. So,
Yeah, I mean, I guess final words, right now I'm working on putting together a online hormone class that people can work through on their own. So kind of at their own pace, they can learn.
Awesome.
And my goal with the class is to be a overview of learning your hormones and your cycle and what's going on. Cause there's so many women that come to me that just have no idea. Like, they've heard about estrogen, progesterone and cycles and ovulation, but to put it all into something that you can understand and work through and learn, and then apply it right directly to your life as you go through the cycle each month and be like, oh, and you can, you know, predict when you might be more prone to cravings or more prone to headaches or things like that. And so I'm really excited about that. And I hope that's going to help women a lot, kind of just get that education of what's going on. But you can find me really easy. My website is Liz Riesen. So LizRiesen.com. And kind of have everything on there. Even the podcast.
Awesome.
So kind of learn more about me there.
And then your podcast is on iTunes.
This is fun.
Yeah,
iTunes, and I have a link on my website too, if that's easier.
Okay, and then your Instagram handle is
Liz Riesen RD.
Okay.
So once
awesome.
Again,
we'll tag you. We'll tag you when we post everything, and everything else will be in the show notes. We'll link to her website and everything in the show notes. So, yeah, thanks for so much for coming on. It was great to meet you and chat with you, and I learned so much.
I know.
And now I want to do the leap test for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll ask for it for Christmas. It's fine.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nerdy Alyssa.
Yeah, everybody ask for it for Christmas. That's a great idea.
Who needs a Dyson vacuum this year? I want the leap test.
Oh my gosh, I got a Dyson vacuum last year. No, it was Bite. You did. It was Bissell.
Oh, Bissell. I have a lot of Bissell vacuums, actually. I have 5 vacuums. That's how many vacuums I own. That's insane.
Yeah, that is kind of weird.
Type A. I have a car vacuum. I have a little handheld vacuum. I have a battery pack operated vacuum, a plug-in vacuum, and a shop vac. 5 vacuums.
You win.
You don't have 5?
No, I have like 3.
Okay, it's still a lot. Most people have like 1.
I think I have 2, yeah.
Anyways. All right. Thanks so much for being on.
Yes.
It was awesome chatting with you.
Yeah,
and we'll
catch
up soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be back next week with a new podcast
on Tuesday.
Tuesday. Bye.
See you next week.
Nice to meet you, too. I usually have a microphone right in front of my face, so this is great. Are you Snapchatting? Brooke's Snapchatting. Can you see Brooke's face?
Yeah. No, just us with our headphones.
Yeah. Because we look so good.